Hi, I'm Talon Stradley, and you're listening to The Whole Way Through, the show where we listen to the entirety of a musician's album and then sit down with that artist to talk about everything that went into creating that collection of music. Me and Daniel Chavez have a bit of a history. I started performing under Newton's Dark Room in February of 2018, and Daniel booked me for my second ever gig. The first time I met him in person was at the Happy Sundays Music Festival. My brother was in town, and we watched D-Chav. My brother loved it, and he has revisited their music time and time again. Since then, I've gone so far as to play in D-Chav's band. He asked me to play synth for his Zombie Walk performance, and I said yes. I was super nervous, as it had been some time since I've played with a band and I was rusty on keys. But Daniel was incredibly patient, supportive, and encouraging. He is truly one of the best musicians and community members floating around Long Beach right now. So, without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to Daniel Chavez of D-Chav.
Hi, this is Daniel Chavez from D-Chav. You're listening to my debut album, Eucalyptus. Hope you enjoy it.
If you're already familiar with D-Chav's music, then you can press your skip 30 button about 60 times at the tone, or you can scrub through to around the 32-minute mark. However, I highly encourage you to give the album a listen, even if you've already heard it before. Who knows? You might find something new. So, without further ado, here's The Tone, and here's Eucalyptus by D-Chav.
Ever in the warm sun. Thank you. Thank you.
You just listened to the album Eucalyptus by D-Chav. And now, we're going to break down that album with Daniel Chavez himself. What is Eucalyptus for you and for D-Chav?
Eucalyptus for me was the coming together of years of work, years of just sitting alone in my room, making up riffs and writing down songs. I mean, I was playing music in groups at the time, but it was very much for me, solitary practice and me realizing that I should bring it out into the light and, you know, play the songs out.
You mentioned that this was a couple years in the making. When did you start writing songs for Eucalyptus?
Well, when I say it was a couple years in the making, that's, you know, in a loose sense. I worked on it for, you know, years, but it was only a short period of time that I realized that I wanted to put it out as an album, maybe about 9 months or so. I started writing the songs for those back in maybe 2013, 2014 or so. And so the album came out at the end of 2017. But at that time, I really wasn't thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, an album. Like I mentioned before, I was playing in other groups and stuff at the time. So maybe even in my head, I was thinking, and I don't really remember, but I was probably thinking like those riffs would be for that band even. But they became just, you know, songs that I felt really, really personally about. Those songs pushed me a lot to, you know, get better and to learn more about what I was doing, and they really pushed me just to open up in my songwriting. I used to write a lot of songs that were like super abstract lyrics and like really, you know, really surreal kind of stuff, and I still like that a lot, but it was also but Eucalyptus very much for me was acknowledging that I could write songs that are more direct and have more, you know, direct meaning and apparent meaning. Because that's one of the things that I think a lot of people really connect with, and definitely I noticed for myself, you know, how deeply I connect with that type of songwriting, as well as, like, really, like, out there prog and stuff like that. Like, I love that stuff. But it is a different, it gives you a different sense of enjoyment, you know what I mean?
What were some of the songs you feel pushed you the most on Eucalyptus?
Alabaster Turn 2, definitely, was one of the ones that, for me, was, you know, when I finally came up with the version of it that is on there, I kind of felt like, whoa, like, for myself personally, not to say that, you know, it's that amazing, that's not for you as an individual to decide, but I felt personally like, whoa, this isn't something that I didn't really ever know that I wanted to make, but now I want to make, like, so many more things like it.
Who did the vocals during the end of Alabaster Turn 2?
Well, it's pretty evenly half and half me and Rebecca Lynn. So Rebecca Lynn played violin and sang in the previous band that I was in, Carl. Carl? With a question mark.
Why did you choose the title Eucalyptus?
Yeah, Eucalyptus. I chose that name for, you know, really personal reasons, but also, like, number one, like, I thought that it sounded, you know, solid, yeah, you know, and it just felt right. But inside of those reasons, that was the street that I lived on at the time that I was recording most of those, Eucalyptus up in, you know, North Long Beach. And it was a really great place to, you know, just write music. I had a lot of space at that place I was living at the time. And, there was a yard first off, which, you know, was the only time that I lived in Long Beach and had a yard. So I got to spend time outside actually. And, yeah. And I wrote a lot of music there. Most of my friends all live, and I now live, you know, on the more south part of town. But when living up in North Long Beach, it was, you know, a little more difficult to get to that side of town unless I wanted to drive across town, you know. So I just spent more time by myself, just playing guitar, writing songs, hanging out in my underwear.
Which song on the album was the closest to not making it on?
Which song on the album was closest to not making it on?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Depends on how you would define song for that album, I suppose. Because there's several things. Like, if you listen to front to back, which is what it's meant for, like, I intended for people to listen to that all in one sitting. Like, it's not that long of an album. It's about, you know, 36 minutes or so. If you listen to it front to back, that's what I intended the experience. So there's in between sections, which are like references to other tunes and things like that. So that for me is more what kind of comes to mind like the little in between bits, but you know, between the songs, like those like swapped in and out a lot. There wasn't really a point with the ones that are on the actual CD that I can remember, you know, not wanting to put them on. That was one of the first decisions that I made about the album. There are other songs though that never even came close to getting onto the album that I did for a moment consider, but immediately didn't. Because actually, Eucalyptus, I had released several tracks from that in a lower, like not the same recordings, but just like you know, lesser versions of them, as an album on Spotify. Like I don't know, even years before that, just myself as D.E. Chavez, Daniel Esteban Chavez, and that was called A Key to Turn a Key That Turns. And so I had already kind of sorted those thoughts out for myself. I'd like released the songs in a way that like felt kind of cohesive, but no one ever heard it. You know, I think it probably had like two plays on there or something. And they were probably both me. but Eucalyptus, yeah, there was never a point that those songs were in question.
You mentioned that this was an album you really wanted to be listened to in one sitting, front to back. How did this mentality manifest itself when creating the record?
I suppose more than anything, well, okay, I can't say that I crafted it all the way through with that in mind, you know? Like, we definitely worked at it in parts, but then we spent a lot of time, like, in post-production listening to the songs and, you know, trying them with different ideas between them and making them flow. And the three tracks on there that are, that have, like, actual, like, drum beats, you know, on them, so Tell Me If You Want Me To, So Clear, and So I Go Aside. Those all, we actually did track the three of those back to back, and they were supposed to be all back to back, but then I decided I want to break those up a bit. So it's kind of funny because, you know, there was a little give and take in both of those directions. But you know, I really love when bands will put out concept albums. I absolutely love it when bands will have tracks bleed into the next track and things like that. It just makes it really special. It kind of creates it as this more cohesive piece of art rather than, you know, just song to song to song, which is fine too. You know, I can think of a lot of great albums that are like that. You know, it's, I guess it just always is connected for me more.
What were some of the themes you put out there to make this feel more cohesive instead of just a collection of songs?
I mean, all the songs have a united theme, I'd say. Several united themes, you know, in an emotional sense. They're very much about how love and loneliness, you know, go hand in hand, and how when you make a decision, whether it's positive or negative, there are consequences, or there are repercussions, or there are benefits, or there are downfalls, you know. It just kind of that overall awareness of existing, I'd say, is kind of a theme between all the tracks. But also, I really wanted to make a lo-fi record. I had spent a lot of time like working on a couple full bands records that, you know, still haven't seen the light of day, and that gets kind of frustrating, you know. So very much for me, and that was for two other groups, but for me, I really wanted to, you know, get away from that. I was really kind of sick of that in the moment. Now I'm craving it again, you know. But in the moment, I was kind of sick of that, and I wanted to just do something that was not relying on anyone except me for the most part. Shout out to Julie and Marcella and Dr. Ka, though, because he, like, helped me so much with it. So, you know, I'm definitely not saying that I did it by myself. But it wasn't like we were depending on seven people's schedules, having a space to record in the first place, getting all the gear there, you know, setting up or going to a studio, you know. I didn't want to worry about all that. And so that played a big part in it. And I'm thankful for that because it also showed me so much of what I want my next full band album to actually be. Because I got to spend the time with post-production that I never did on full band recordings before.
What kind of lessons did you learn from this album that you think you're going to take with you into the next one? What can people look out for in the next D-Chav release?
What you can look out for is some bangers, yo. Put out. Yeah, I mean, I love all the weird stuff, but I've also just been really enjoying like trying to write hooks and stuff like that, and that's just really fun. But also you can really look forward to more tracks bleeding into tracks, and, you know, things overlapping, songs referencing other songs. Just a little bit more like actual like rock oriented, because like Eucalyptus, there's only the last track if you have the bonus version of the CD. There's full drums on that or full band on that, but the next D-Shop album is gonna be full band, at least for the most part. I'm sure I might make some decisions in there at some point, but for the most part, yeah.
That's cool.
Which song on the record was the hardest to record?
I suppose I'd say So Clear was the hardest to record. We probably spent the most time on that. The drum pattern on that was something that Julian, Dr. Ka and I had spent a lot of time on together. We originally had one version of it and then a second, and we went back to the first one, and you know, it came together really cool, but it took us a long time. Same thing with just all the post-production edits. Like, I just had really specific ideas, and that guy's a wizard, you know. So we were able to go and do a lot of post-production. It was really fun. He loves doing that. I love doing that. So,
what is your favorite song on Eucalyptus?
My favorite song on the album, I wouldn't necessarily consider it a song, but the last track on there, Strong Silent Hope, that's my favorite one. Just because I love John Frusciante, and that's just a real John Frusciante inspired track for me. It's, you know, pretty much one chord progression all the way through, and I just let myself go with the solos. There's a lot of layers. I did that track on a looper pedal, and I just couldn't have been happier with the way it came out, especially after we mastered it. And like, you know, and just mix it down just a little bit, tweaks here and there. Like, it came out just really, really pinched and sweet and mellow, and it's melancholy, but it also has this like exciting like edge to it. I think that's honestly still probably one of my favorite recordings that I've just made in general.
Can you describe the album art?
That's cool. Yeah, this is fun, because all the elements of this album are real meaningful for me. They really, really are. And so, you know, so much of the album is already collaborations and, you know, about friendship. It's about love and, like I said, things like that. So keeping with that theme, you know, the album art is related to that too. My friend Akira, Akira Usagi Art, if you want to check him out. Fantastic. He's done a lot of murals around town. There's one on Broadway. There used to be one on Redondo. Got painted over, though. But so he designed the original drawing that you see on there. The like circular design that's kind of lines weaving in and out. I believe the term is Ainu. It's a form of Japanese artwork that's usually on garments. So he designed something like that for me because I had given him a call, told him I wanted him to do the album art. And so he presented these shirts to me. I was like, how about something like this? So I was like, okay, sure. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. Nothing comes to mind to do with it right now, but like, let's give it a shot. So he did a whole design for me. Came out amazing. I have the black and white version. I'm going to use it for something else later on too. But so what I did, because at the time I was really getting into like making digital art between like, you know, digital photo editing apps on my phone, on my computer, things like that. So I took that design, put a watermark on top of that of some bleeding light images that I had taken, and just really played around with that, and then flipped the saturation, made it super distorted. I did it a bunch of times, so it got like kind of like low quality, and then I put it back into another program on the computer so that, you know, I could really bring up the resolution. And just it all came out in such a blend of like organic creation versus digital versus like this ancient print, you know, this ancient style of print brought into you know, 2000s and editing photos and stuff like that. So it was really, really fun, and it was awesome to be able to collaborate with him in the first place, let alone like do something that the end product was cooler than I could have ever, you know, thought of creating. That's how I felt about it. I don't know how other people think feel about it, but I love it.
One thing that I felt in hearing your music and seeing you perform is that you feel like a live artist. There's this electricity that really comes about when you play live. When did you start performing the songs from Eucalyptus live?
Well, the song, there is one song on there that Carl used to play, and that's Crystal Clear Truth. I don't remember if I just call it Crystal or Crystal Clear Truth on the album, though. You have to get the album and check it out. Yeah, I think it's probably just Crystal. Cristal is what we used to say. But so Carl used to play that song very differently than that. You know, same arrangement, same melody and all that, but we used to do, you know, our thing with it. So that one was being played before, but other than that, none of those had seen light until I started playing solo shows as Dishav. The first Dishav show, I was actually just telling someone about this. Shout out to Lorenzo Gigliotti, if you're listening to this. He had booked me for a show over at El Dorado Park, his thing, Showgasm, was a couple years ago, I think 2016. And he billed me as Daniel Chavez, Psychedelic Originals by Daniel Chavez. And I just thought that was the funniest thing. So that's why I had like started to put, you know, a moniker to it. Cause I was like, well, I don't want to go by Daniel Chavez, you know? So when I came up with that name and started playing solo shows, that's when, you know, started playing Tell Me If You Want Me To, So Clear, So I'll Go Aside, slew of tunes that you'll be hearing, that you hear at Dishav shows still too.
What was it like recording your live album?
Yeah, that was really fun. And that was just something I wanted to put out there for the sake of putting out there. Those are probably actually going to come down soon. So anyone listening to this, like, you should go check those out while they're still up. Probably going to take them down sometime in about March or so, just while we're getting ready to put out some more singles. So that live album, or the live, you know, little set of songs, is from our album release party, actually. So it's from the Eucalyptus album release party, recorded at Disney on Vinyl. What you're hearing is one overhead mic just inside the room. That's it. But it came out so cool. And that's also a testament to how good, you know, Dr. Kai is with doing a mix of a single track and, you know, doing a quick master of it. You know, super easy. He just made it sound fantastic, though. And so what was that like? I mean, it was crazy. I couldn't believe, you know, the way they came out. That show was really, really fun. You know how it is when you play live. You always have moments when you're just like, oh, why did I do that instead of that? Like,
right.
But, like, none of that. Having those recordings helped me to kind of forget about that. Because, like, that was our album release show. And, you know, I don't have, like, a group that is the same group every single time. You know, you've played with me before.
Yeah.
but, I mean, you know, shout out to all my friends that have been there with me playing shows. The point I'm trying to make is at that time, we weren't playing all that much, you know. Like, we had maybe played a handful of gigs. So it was a little scary, you know, releasing a CD and just, like, having a lot of trust that everyone's going to, like, come and practice for it and stuff like that. And it all came together.
What opportunities has this album led you to?
I think the biggest opportunity, honestly, was just showing myself that I could put something out there for myself because I wanted to. And it's opened a lot of doors in terms of, like, gigs. It definitely made it easier to, like, put bands together to play shows and stuff like that because I had something solid I could say, here, this is what we'll play. That was a big part of it. I think the only other thing I would say, and I mentioned this before, is that it helped me to know a lot about what I want to do for my next recording.
What music were you listening to while creating
Eucalyptus? Oh, man, I don't really remember. Probably a lot of the same stuff I listen to now. Listen to a lot of Norah Jones. Love Norah Jones. Definitely, like, she's always in my ears. The Washed Out album, Within Without, definitely was a big inspiration for me. Like I was saying before, like, it was made over such a span of time. Like, I definitely listened to a lot of the Mars Volta. I love old R&B, Isley Brothers. Old, quote unquote old, you know, it's not that old, but
yeah.
I love the older stuff too. Definitely, okay, I love The Weeknd, you know, like, his voice is just really great, and his sense of production is really cool, and so that was definitely inspiration for me. Trying to think of what else. I really like Melody's Echo Chamber, but I don't know if I was necessarily listening to them at that time. I think they might have been after that came out.
What are your thoughts when listening back to the album now?
When I listen back to it, I feel, I mean, definitely it's helped me to grow. It's definitely pushed me. But it's also, it was really, really validating for me, because I believe so firmly in you know, music being like just such a special art form, you know. And I feel like that's an obvious statement, you know, but it's something that we got to remind ourselves about. Music's not about being perfect. Music's not about having a crystal clear sound. It's not about you know, this mic versus that mic versus these cables versus this room versus, you know, it's not about all that stuff. Music can be anything. Like, there's so many great lo-fi recordings out there. There's so many weird moments on, you know, fantastic albums. And that's like, that sort of special stuff is what makes music. And yeah, there's a benefit to like recording studios. There's a huge benefit to all that. And those guys know what they're talking about too. Like, if that's what you want, then that's the place to go. But I knew for myself at the time I was making it that, like I had even mentioned before, like I didn't want to do that. I wanted to like just try different things. I wanted to do stuff on my looper and just like mess around with like mics going into my looper and the stuff like that. And I wanted to mess around like a ton in post-production, have tons of effects, tons of layers. And so it was really validating for me because people seemed to enjoy it. And it was just like, yeah, like I don't have to do what I used to think that I have to do to get to the place I don't want to be.
What was your favorite memory creating the album?
So first, being at Dr. Ka's studio. And at the time, he was living at a house up in Cerritos. So his studio was just his bedroom, and it was cool, you know? Like, it was a real nice moment. Oh, actually, you know what? No, I'm combining memories. He would bring his studio over to my house as well. So the day we tracked bass on a couple of the songs, particularly Tell Me If You Want Me To, because all the bass tracks I had done on that, and I'm super proud of those bass tracks. But recording those was such a blast, because bass for me, when it comes to my own music, is just... I don't realize until the recording's already done that how second nature it just comes. Because I played bass longer than I played guitar. So, you know, it's just kind of in there. Even if I don't really practice it all like a ton anymore, it's just kind of in there for me. So putting down the bass tracks on that was so cathartic. And, you know, I just did stuff that listening to it now, I'm like, man, the counterpoint that I did. Like, I was just really proud of myself, I suppose. And I was just really excited about it. So that's one memory. Also, when I was writing Tell Me If You Want Me To for the album, I spent a lot of time listening to it in my headphones while I was riding my bike and just kind of singing along and like trying to come up with different ideas. So like those times combined, I'd say, which was a lot of times, because that song, I wanted it to be just right, and I felt like I was able to get it just right.
In your ideal perfect world, what is the best way to listen to this album?
Definitely the best way to listen to this album. Put it in your headphones, lay it on your bed, and just chill out, you know, like, just, you know, stare at the ceiling, think about your cat, and listen to the album.
Is there any other miscellaneous stories that we might not have touched on that you'd like to share?
Yeah. I had mentioned the in-between segments for the album, like when you listen to in between the tracks. There's one that goes... That's a reference to a song that Carl used to play called Stabbing. It's just this one riff that I came up with, and actually, like, years into playing the song Stabbing, I started incorporating it at the end. At that point, I didn't know what to do with it. You know, because I just had this little looper version of it that I had recorded, like, as a like a notepad thing. But I was like, this just, like, sounds so cool, like, the tone that I had at the time. And, yeah, so I just put it on there. So a lot of that stuff is like that.
Today, we talked to Dichov. You can find Dichov's music on Spotify, Bandcamp, iTunes, and wherever else you get your music. If you know a band that wants to be on the show, you can send us an email at thewholewaythrough@klbp.org or by finding us on social media at @wholewaythrough. The Whole Way Through is a production of Newton's Dark Room and KLBP. For more information, visit klbp.org or newtonsdarkroom.com. You can find past episodes on the show's podcast feed by searching for The Whole Way Through wherever you get your podcasts. Join us next week for our interview with The Kid Chocolate Band. Thank you for listening.